This is Triad Arts Weekend, your one-stop menu for artistic goings-on throughout the Triad and High Country. I'm David Ford. You know, someone once said, art is the stored honey of the human soul. Well, if that's true, and who are we to disagree, then we've got ourselves one sweet little show for you today. We've got your theater, dance, and chamber music courses all queued up for you, but we begin with our beverage of choice, Songs of Water. Songs of Water is a Greensboro-based band whose music is constantly evolving and difficult to pigeonhole. They've been featured on PRI's Soundscape radio program Echoes and NPR's Thistle and Shamrock. Thistle host Fiona Ritchie called Songs of Water's release The Sea Has Spoken a, quote, very rewarding listen. And New Indie Bands magazine's Chris Smith writes, no matter what your flavor of folk or world music, I think you'll probably find something on the Songs of Water disc that you'll like. I know that I certainly did, end quote. Well, the very same thing can be said for Songs of Water's new 2015 release, Stars and Dust. It's epic, folkish, percussive, worldly, at times whimsical, and others worldly wise. Songs of Water is led by singer-songwriter and multi-instrumentalist Stephen Roach. He's excited about sharing songs from the new CD with a live audience Friday night at 7:30 in the beautiful Carolina Theater. It'll be a Songs of Water album release party that you won't soon forget. Stephen stopped by for a little sneak preview and a behind-the-scenes look at the making of Stars and Dust. So, Stephen Roach, welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
How's life treating you?
Good. It's been a good season. We've been able to tour a lot and finally excited to have this album finished. So.
Yeah. How long was it in the making?
Honestly, all things considered, probably close to 3 years.
3 years.
Maybe 2.5, you know, but It was longer than we ever anticipated.
did it begin with the title cut? Is that the one that kind of got the gears spinning? Do you remember the process?
Sure. You know, actually, when we started this process, the title track, Stars and Dust, was the only pre-written song that we had. Maybe there was one other one. But we started with really no pre-written material, and we didn't know that Stars and Dust was going to be the title track until everything was recorded and we were ready to package it. So.
Yeah. I'm going back to, I guess, 3 years plus, but a lot of the songs that you initially were putting out there evolved out of, like, jam sessions, essentially.
That's true. A lot of the music began that way, with just little experimental jam sessions or just getting into something. Oh, I like that melody. I love that rhythm. Let's follow that rabbit and see where it goes, you know? But this album was much different, and it started with a lot of composition, songwriting, and just ideas, you know, based more off of pre-written song structures rather than instrumental jams, I guess, and then we took it from there.
How was that? I mean, a lot of people feel more constrained with that structure, but again, that is what it gives the power of so many of these songs. What was it like getting into that format?
Well, we had a lot of help from the producer we worked with on this album, and his name's Elijah Mosley. He's in Lincolnton, North Carolina, has a studio called Threshing Floor Audio. And he had worked with several of our friends and did incredible work. He always wanted to work with us, and so we just decided to take the leap with him. But when we started working with him, he said, just bring me all of your material. Don't sift it. Don't edit it. Bring me the good, the bad, and the ugly, and then we'll find what I feel is the strongest of the strong, and we're going to cultivate that. And so that's what we did. We probably brought him over 100 different files, audio files, between the six of us, of just melodies and all this stuff. And as it turned out, the majority of what he chose to work with was more songwriting and lyrical content.
I remember when the forest floor became gilded stars beneath our feet.
Yeah, I'm loving the sound of the album in broad strokes, and also the memorable hooks, memorable choruses and bridges, and then this lyrical aspect that you talk about. There, you've gone from almost purely instrumental with maybe some vocalese thrown into a lot of songs based on these lyrics. Were you taking part in the writing for these songs?
I've done the majority of the lyric writing on this album. Our co-writer, Greg Willett, he co-wrote 11 Miles, the lyrics, with me on that one, and then Reverie is another song on the album, and he penned those lyrics. But the majority of it, it just came from my poetry books and my journals and just personal writing. And that was probably the biggest challenge for us creatively, you know, because our music instrumentally, which so many people came to know us for, were these big, epic, sweeping, you know, instrumental movements. And the beauty of instrumental music like that is that it leaves room for subjectivity. It leaves room for personal interpretation. You know, you could play the same song and 10 people would, it would mean something completely different to them. The moment you add lyric, it sort of straps it down, it gives it more of a linear trajectory, and you know, this is what the song is about. But so when I was approaching the lyrics, I tried to think about it, if this makes sense, in that same cinematic instrumental approach. So rather than lyrics coming in and dominating this instrumental music, I wanted the lyric to exemplify or complement the instrumental notion that we were known for. And I think we pulled that off. A lot of the lyrics tend to be very poetic or surreal or abstract, which I'm attracted to that anyway.
Yeah, they really are. They create images that pair nicely with the soundscape I'm hearing in ways that do allow the listener a chance to be creative.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's what we wanted. We wanted a lyric to come into the context we had already created rather than be a strong departure from it. Even our approach sonically to the way we did the vocals, a lot of it we would even take violin lines and have the violin follow the vocal melody and layer it with instruments singing with the vocal. So we did some creative things like that to find that.
Yeah, as always, some wonderful soundscapes, to wonderful textures, I guess, and you just alluded to one there, hearing the recurring use of clarinet paired in unison with either a string or vocal as mm-hmm. well, and it gives that added emotional impact. And again, another color I hadn't heard necessarily.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned that, because that was one of our key sounds that we felt was an awesome pairing. It's a viola and the clarinet. And we did that on Stars and Dust, and when we heard that, we were just like, this is a beautiful combination, and that ended up showing up several times on the album in that combo, and I love it.
Yeah. Lessons learned from this recording process. tell me about that. It's a big one.
Never go into the studio with no music written, or you'll be there for 3 years.
Yeah. No. Now, I'm hearing the way you began, and I'm just thinking, you know, idealistically, oh, that's really neat. You come with all this stuff, and you craft things together, but that's a lot of material to go through.
Well, and you have 6 composers, essentially, in the group, and all of us are very opinionated and very different in our approach, and then you add a producer, which he actually helped to bring us together. He was sort of the center pole that helped us all come around that, but it was a fun challenge. Some of these songs have had several makeovers before they were finished, and that's part of the process.
And what are you most happy with?
Well, honestly, I'm pretty happy with the whole album, and I don't think I've ever said that before. Usually I'm my own worst critic, but I think we really created a work of art with this one. The song Golden Summer, I have to say I'm pretty proud of that one, because that's the one song that the band was so unsure about, and it was such a departure musically from anything we had done before. It was happy, it was in a major key, you know, it had a poppy chorus. That was the song the producer said, I'm not putting this album out unless that song's on there. And then the band said, we're not putting this album out if that song's on here, you know? And so,
wow.
Yeah, and so we had Clash of the Titans there, and it was really fun to see that now that is one of the band's most favorite songs to perform live of anything on the album. It's really neat to see that.
You're thinking.
11 Miles. Really enjoyed this tune. Modern sounding grooves with some traditional instruments as always mixed in. What all am I hearing churning along as your engine on 11 Miles? A lot going on there.
Oh, it is. And that's the beauty of that song in particular, and actually of several of the songs, is that if I didn't tell you what we were playing, it would sound like a modern pop song. But with 11 Miles, the instrument that leads it is the Chinese guzheng. And it's a lap harp. You may have seen it in some of the old Kung Fu movies. You know, it's I think it's a grandfather to the koto.
Plucked string instrument?
Yes. You pluck it, and it's like a lap harp, but it's so beautiful. And that's the first instrument you hear. And then it's accompanied by the hammered dulcimer, which we've used a lot in our music over the years. And then we've actually got African percussion, West African percussion, the dununs, playing some of the drum parts there.
Skeletons grew skin. Dirt gave birth to eyes. The blind could see again. For the very first time, the colors coming back to a pale midnight view. And I forgot myself. I was caught staring at you.
Keep coming back to the word texture, mm-hmm. but it does create that wonderful one. And some creative use of the acoustic piano as well. I love it when you pair in unison along with the plucks of the Chinese instrument, mm-hmm. the piano way up in the chimey register.
Yeah, very good you pointed that out. I think our pianist, John Kliegel, and he's one of the instrumentalists in the band, he had a lot of fun with that. And we approach this in such a way that there's a lot of unison between instruments, and the piano just really exemplified some of those tones and timbres.
It was just a moment. It came 500 years. And I could stay even longer. So long as you are here. You could draw the backdrop, whatever. So long as you stay here.
It was very rare that a song stayed on the instrument or even in the key in some ways from where we first started and on this album. For instance, Golden Summer, I originally wrote it on classical guitar. It wasn't until I switched it over to the Kamalingoni, which is West African harp, sort of like the kora from Mali. And then I just tuned the Ngoni up to the same key as I'd been playing it on classical guitar and transposed the part onto this harp. And when the band heard it, that's when the ice began to melt and they started coming around to it a little bit, you know. But the same is true for Ghost. That one probably had the largest makeover. We started that song with an Appalachian fiddle part and a sitar and tabla. And now it's on the album, it's xylophones, hammered dulcimer, and piano, and electric guitar that really drives it. No wonder it took 3 years, right? Ghost was really interesting for us because if I had to compare it to something, for me, it sort of hints at some of the Peter Gabriel stuff from in the 80s. It has that. We even used rototoms. But that was the neat thing, is that we started off with Middle Eastern frame drums, and by the end of it, we had an African dunun with a set of rototoms, and sort of our influence was Prince, When Doves Cry. That type of sound, you know, percussion wise and so I think it came out really unique.
Well, you've got a neat shift from that tune into this beautiful plucked Middle Eastern sounding instrument to open the tune Ash. By the way, how do you all play all these obscure world instruments?
I don't know. we're more of experimentalist, you know? If it's got strings or if we think there's a song hiding in there, we'll grab it and see if we can do it. But
you have a percussion background, don't you?
I do. I've played percussion most of my life. I've studied West African music, some classical Indian music. I'm probably most well-versed percussion-wise in Middle Eastern, Egyptian percussion, Turkish, you know, and I did that somewhat professionally for a while, just learning the traditional musics and playing that around. But the instrument in Ash is called a rabab, and that's from Afghanistan, and Luke plays that. He does the intro there on Ash, and it's a beautiful instrument with a goat skin. It has like 18 sympathetic strings, 3 gut strings. It's a wonderful instrument. And
non-musician, Stephen, when you say sympathetic strings, what are you talking about there?
So there's 18 strings that are tuned to a particular scale, and then when you play the note on the playing strings, they all resonate and sort of, it sounds like a natural reverb is what the effect that it causes.
Before words like bricks and mortar rebuild the structures of a day, let my pure devotion redefine the tenets of a faith.
Interestingly, you wrap up the album with kind of a nod to Songs of Water Past and a beautiful instrumental. Mm-hmm. I love the sound of the word chiaroscuro, and defined as an effect of contrasted light and shadow created mm-hmm. by light falling unevenly or from a particular direction onto something.
Yeah, that one does sort of carry the DNA of traditional Songs of Water sound, I guess. But we wanted to take that concept of how light and shadow play off one another, and we wanted to interpret it musically. And so that's what we did. There are moments where it's very uplifting and you feel this major lift, but then there are other moments when it's almost terrifying with the sound. The album in general, Stars and Dust, tends to be about contrast. And that's really where a lot of the songs live, even conceptually. You know, you've got a song titled Evergreen, which has this sort of eternal, hopeful feeling to it. And then you've got a song Ash or Ghost, you know, that's the opposite of that. And so really on throughout the whole album, you have this dance between light and shadow and different contrasting moods and imagery. And so that song sort of culminates all of those ideas.
Well, Stephen Roach, congratulations on this great new album, Stars and Dust. Mm-hmm. It sounds great. I'm going to throw it in my car and drive around town, listen to it for the rest of the week. Thanks for being here.
Yes, sir. Thank you for having me.
Songs of Waters, singer-songwriter and multi-instrumentalist Stephen Roach. The new album is Stars and Dust, and we've been sampling from it throughout the interview, and you can hear many of those gripping tracks live in concert during the Songs of Waters album release concert at the beautiful Carolina Theater in Greensboro, Friday night, June 12th at 7:30. You'll find links to more information at WFDD.org. Just click on Triad Arts Weekend. I'm David Ford, and we're going to take a short little break now before we return with A Tiny House. That's right, Bethany Chafin will lead us on a tiny house expedition next when Triad Arts Weekend continues. This is Triad Arts Weekend. I'm David Ford, and I'll return with you on the second half of the show. In the meantime, associate producer Bethany Chafin has this up-close look at a tiny movement that may not have made it on your radar, the art of sustainable housing.
Alexis Stevens and Christian Parsons are the minds and muscle behind Tiny House Expedition. The couple is about to finish the first phase of their project with the completion of their very own tiny house. And this summer, they'll take their new home on the road in order to document the tiny house movement taking place across the country. Whether for urban revitalization, to ease the problem of homelessness, or to inspire efficient, sustainable living, each community engaging with this housing option has a story. Christian and Alexis intend to capture and share these stories. With backgrounds in film, production, and photography, the two will create a documentary from their travels. The adventure begins and ends in Winston-Salem, and Christian and Alexis stopped by WFDD to tell me more.
Yeah, we've come a long way, I guess, in the about 6 months since we last sat down with you. We have a almost completed house. It will be completed by June 20th for this big event we have coming up. And also, since we last spoke, we've taken our house on its first road trip. And it was only a 15-minute drive, which was good. It was definitely a heart-wrenching experience, but it went really smooth.
Yeah, it did. I was driving the truck with Alexis following us, following me in the house. So I'm sure her view was definitely a lot different than mine, but it was a little nerve-wracking the first, you know, two country roads I went down. But once I got on a wide enough road, it pulled great, and it wasn't really a big deal. It was a nice.
Well, that's when it became a little bit exhilarating, because then you're like, oh wow, we're gonna be doing this around the country.
Yeah. But it pulled great, and it was really. I got a lot of interesting looks as I was driving down the road too, which was a lot of fun.
Any honks or just kind of waves, or mainly looks?
There were a lot of people looking. A couple of people in the neighborhood waved, and then
a few pictures.
A few people took pictures that probably shouldn't have been taking pictures. But
no.
but no, it was great. It was really fun. It was a really fun first voyage for the house.
So you talk about the people who were kind of giving you some looks and waving or taking pictures. So give our listeners a sense of what they were seeing on the road. What does this house, now that it's finished, look like? Let's get an idea of the aesthetic.
I think it looks like an adorable cedar bungalow. Rich cedar siding and a forest green metal roof, and there's a couple of little patches of some great white reclaimed wood and a bright orange door.
And then once you open that bright orange door, Christian, maybe give us a little bit of a visual or virtual tour of the inside.
Well, when you first walk into it, hopefully the first thing you notice is the wood floors. We did oak wood floors, which is not the usual thing because oak's pretty heavy. So to put that in a tiny house like this on wheels is a little bit of a different thing. So reclaimed wood, white walls. The sofa is actually made out of wormy maple, which looks absolutely amazing against the floor and the walls. And then you should be able to see a set of steps, once I get them built, that go up to the loft area, which is big and open and has five big windows in it.
There's a lot of light.
There's a ton of light.
We have how many windows?
There's 12 windows and a door.
Wow.
So there's, yeah, that's a lot of people don't have 12 windows on the first floor of their house or on the front of their
house.
Right.
I bet that helps with a feeling sort of expansiveness, even though you're in a smaller space. It helps you to feel connected to what's around you.
It really does, and that's also why we went like dark floors, the white walls, because it makes it feel grounded, but also like kind of airy. And those stairs, we've done a lot of design work on these, and I think it would be pretty exciting because it's a quadruple function staircase. Do you want to?
Quadruple function.
Yeah, it does a lot. Well, it's
usually just two functions is impressive.
Right. Yeah. The set of stairs is actually also going to have a lot of storage, so it's also going to be a closet.
Okay.
And the bottom step will have space where you could actually sit. It'll be the same height as the sofa, so you can sit on the bottom step and use it for a desk that folds out of the wall so you can sit at that desk.
Neat.
Then it'll have storage inside it, and it'll also be a step.
Okay.
So that's three things it does right there.
Wow.
And then the rest of the steps, there's only going to be four steps. So the other four steps will have cubbies and also be part of the closet. It'll have a much more room inside of it than it really seems like it does. Mm-hmm.
The fun part is getting in and figuring out how to customize and tailor for how we live our life. Some of the special tailoring comes in our second loft. We have a small loft, which we've planned for my son, Garrett. And he's 8, and he'll be visiting us periodically on our trip. And that's his room. And so it was important for him to feel involved and that this is his space. And so we did things like, you know, he's got a pull down table that he thought was neat. That was his idea. He also really wanted a pulley system. He's like, how do I carry toys up here? He's like, what if we have a pulley? I was like, that's fantastic, buddy. Absolutely, we can figure that out. So stuff like that.
Yeah, so now we're going to get a little like wooden milk crate, and I'm going to put a pulley up so he can actually, so he can do that. So he can put his toys in, go up there, and then pull them up.
The why for our project, the reason why we're doing this, it's very simple. Microhousing is worthwhile. It's a great flexible housing option for a lot of people. More than anything, we're affordable, quality housing advocates. And for us, this provides a great fill-in-the-gap solution, number one. And there's just the simple pleasure of inspiring people, you know, in almost in a selfish way. Like, we're growing as individuals by sharing with others. And there are a lot of wonderful stories out there. We're going to talk with social entrepreneurs in different parts of the country, including locally, who are identifying problems in their communities and coming up with solutions, practical DIY solutions for those problems. Nothing is more inspiring than that. So simple storytelling and inspiration is really what it's all about. One of our first stops is in Maryland. There's a group called Sustain-A-Fest, and they are doing middle school tiny house building projects.
Really?
And I love that, you know, young makers getting firsthand learning experience. And currently they're having this like really cool contest, the house they built last year. This is house number 2. It's like you write a short essay and you can win a tiny house. Like, how great is that? It doesn't get more accessible than that. So again, they're looking to provide good homes for these tiny homes, and providing a great hands-on learning experience. Our journey keeps expanding, actually, and that's one thing we kind of have to keep in check. We're now in the 45 stop range.
Wow.
Yeah, it's quite a few.
It's quite one in almost each state, or
just about.
It's getting close to that, yeah. And we've had a lot of people through Facebook and Twitter actually, you know, contact us and say, "Well, we hope you come through here, through our town or through our state, in hopes of, you know, some would be good for interviews, and some would be good just to stop by and maybe have a barbecue."
Yeah, we're really excited. Some of the places are spending the most time, Texas, surprisingly. I know we talked a little bit about that last time. California, not so surprisingly, the Pacific Northwest. But there's quite a few in the Midwest that are starting to pop up. And there are some different flavors, too, like intentional communities that are more rural-based settings. More urban projects are popping up. Cincinnati is one. Again, use of available underused land for tiny homes as an experiment in affordable housing. We love that. We're going to be going to, actually, this is none of the areas I just mentioned, South Dakota. There's a Native American reservation that they are looking into a tiny house project because they lack housing options. And I'm really interested to learn, to dig more into that, because I think there's a lot of cultural elements to be discovered there, and also struggles that this group of folks experience that most Americans don't think about. Yeah, so some really good stuff to dig into, which, by the way, we're going to have so much story to tell. It's going to be difficult to craft it all into the final film, so we're going to be sharing short videos and stories along the way. And you can follow along on our interactive map and learn a little bit along the way, and maybe some folks can do their own road trip, maybe inspired by ours. We'd love to see that.
That'd be great.
Alexa Stevens and Christian Parsons, you can engage with the two at Tiny House Expedition on the Green on Saturday, June 20th. The event runs from 11:30 a.m. to 8 p.m. at the Green Space on the corner of 6th and Liberty Streets in Winston-Salem. It'll be the debut of Alexis and Christian's own tiny house, and there will be two other tiny homes on display as well. You can enjoy food, music, demonstrations, and attendees can enter a raffle to win their very own stay in Alexis and Christian's tiny house. For more information, visit our website at wfdd.org. And once you're there, click on Triad Arts Weekend.
Triad Arts Weekend Associate Producer Bethany Chafin. Peppercorn Theater's got an outstanding summer series of engaging plays with a message for young people and adults. They're all set to begin at the Winston-Salem Children's Museum. Then Second Sundays on 4th continues its incredible eclectic mix of free live music outdoors downtown in Winston with the salsa band Bio Ritmo this weekend. And Bethany's got a triad to do just for you that's off the beaten path but right in the pocket in downtown Greensboro. Picture a cool, handcrafted brew in your hand and a hot rendition of a Beethoven string quartet performed live for free while you sip your suds. Oh, it's coming up next after this short break. Welcome back to Triad Arts Weekend. I'm David Ford. Our mission from day one was to write original music in the classic salsa style, says Bio Ritmo's lead singer and composer, Ray Alvarez. He goes on to say that experimentation is as much a part of the tradition as the wide-ranging Afro-Cuban genres that it's based on. Well, truer words have never been spoken, and this weekend you can hear for yourself as Second Sundays on 4th brings this phenomenal band to the Triad. For generations, Afro-Caribbeans from all over the world have migrated to the States, enriching every aspect of the art scene in America. Bio Ritmo connects us all to that migration and to Latin dance music's shift from the big band mambos of the 1950s to the cutting-edge sounds and smaller bands that began appearing a couple of decades later in New York. One of the most intriguing and influential examples of that unique sound comes in the form of Bio Ritmo, who describes their style as hard-hitting modern salsa. They're known as true rebels who have helped pioneer a new generation of musicians that thrive on the spirit of experimentation that once defined the 70s Latin sound that came to be known as salsa. At its core, Bio Ritmo brings supreme musicianship, a powerful rhythm section, and tight horn arrangements that bring a high level of polish to the outstanding original salsa and Latin jazz charts that they've been performing live for more than 20 years. Behind many of those stellar arrangements is keyboardist, arranger, and manager Marlissa Simmons. She says the band is excited to kick off this weekend's Second Sundays on 4th concert, where dancing will be strongly encouraged. Yeah, Ray's got a great voice, and I really enjoy his singing and just the energy of his voice. He's a real entertainer.
He is. He's a real entertainer. He's an artist, too. I mean, he's a painter. He does the designs for all our covers, the last five at least. He's kind of all over the place. He's a musician, artist, and he's definitely the face of the band in many ways as far as, you know, he writes all the lyrics, does all the artwork, and he has a big say in almost every song we write. Of course, if he's singing to it, and he writes a lot of the songs as well.
So. All right. What are some of the different dance music styles that you all cover, say, besides salsa?
Salsa is also just an all-encompassing word. And so within that, you've grouped together already a ton of different rhythms and styles that kind of fall under that. But as far as generally speaking, you know, Bio Ritmo pulls from all over the place, and not with only within the salsa genre, but, you know, we definitely throw in other Latin rhythms. that we love, such as samba, bossa nova. You know, we delve into some different type of 6/8 patterns associated from, you know, Afro-Cuban rhythms and Colombia. There's a Colombian merengue on our album this time around, which is not a very well-known rhythm, but it was a cover song that we did, and it was our first time discovering that style too. And besides that, we definitely pull from, everyone has different roots in a lot of different music, and the drummers coming from, as I said, Ray was the drummer at first, and he played reggae. He had a dub band for many years before he joined Bayaritmo. The timbale player, Justina Riccio, was in a punk rock band. All the horns were jazz guys, and myself come from a classical upbringing mostly, and then I delved into playing a lot of different, samba was my big thing for a while before I delved into salsa. So we pull from everything, and we also are really into Middle Eastern music, Arabic music, Greek music, and we definitely throw that in when we can. So we're kind of all over the place.
Oh, just your basic punk rock, reggae, jazz, salsa band with a little Middle Eastern thrown in. That's great.
Yeah, you know, it's hard to say. We are definitely a salsa band because we definitely put everything that our influence into that, you know, we the clave being the essential rhythm that we follow the rules of the clave, and everything is going to be in that style. But we just let ourselves do what we, you know, just let our minds go free, and we don't really have any limitations in terms of what any writer wants to contribute and throwing in whatever we feel like.
Bayaritmo keyboardist, arranger, and manager Marlissa Simmons. She and her 12 bandmates will be live in concert this Sunday, June 14th from 4 to 6 on 4th Street downtown in Winston-Salem. We've been sampling from the band's 2014 release, Se Les Olvido, and you'll find links at WFDD.org and click on Triad Arts Weekend. You can follow us on Twitter at Triad Arts Speak, by the way, and you'll find podcasts on our site as well. Again, it's WFDD.org, and just click on Triad Arts Weekend. Peppercorn Theater celebrates 5 years of imagination with their summer series June through August at the Children's Museum of Winston-Salem and Hanesbrands Theater. Peppercorn is a nonprofit organization showcasing emerging professional artists, producing original theater works, and sharing their live performance art with children and families throughout the Triad. This season begins with Maisie and Sprout by Naomi Schaefer. UNC School of the Arts alumni and Peppercorn producing directors John Bowers and Anna Rooney stopped by recently to talk about the new season, and they were joined by artistic director Harry Poster.
Peppercorn has given me opportunities to develop skills that I already have. For instance, I used to play piano, and I haven't focused on my piano skills in years, but sometimes it's easier for me to just play for auditions than it is to bring in or hire a local pianist. So I've been able to revisit things that were artistic elements of my past, but I've also had the opportunity to learn so much more about disciplines that aren't my specialty because I have the pleasure of working with some of the best in the field, both here in Winston-Salem and guest artists who come from out of town. And being able to be part of the dialogue of what's happening now in theater for young audiences and what's going to be happening in the next 5 to 10 years has expanded my view of what I call theater.
Well, give me an example of something that, through your work with Peppercorn, it helps you on a day-to-day.
Sure. So I'm right now working on my delegating skills. When we started Peppercorn, it was just John and I, starting in the fall of 2010. And between the two of us, we did almost everything from writing and printing fundraising letters to playing the piano for auditions to designing the posters and cleaning up the snacks. I mean, we did every little thing. And now that our team is expanding and growing over the past 5 years, with that means that some of those things that I have been doing for 5 years aren't my responsibility anymore. So I'm learning how to communicate how I did those things and what I've learned about the best way to facilitate collaboration and to communicate that to the people I work with so then I can let go of those things and focus on the bigger picture.
That's step one for delegation. And that's right, John, congratulations. 5 years of Peppercorn Theater. It just seems like yesterday, though, you were both in here saying we're working 80 hours a week doing everything, and now here you are 5 years later. Congratulations.
Still working 80 hours a week doing everything.
That's, well, listen. So the fifth season coming up on Original Plays in Winston-Salem, and I want to talk a little bit about the venue and then, of course, the collaboration between you all and the Children's Museum here in town.
It's been less than a year since we merged with the Children's Museum. We made all of this official in October of 2014, so this will be the first summer season that we've presented in our merger with the Children's Museum.
How's it going?
It's been a beautiful relationship. Like Anna mentioned before, the type of hours that we were working every single day couldn't have lasted much longer with this company. And what we needed was a support system and an infrastructure to be able to continue to create the artistic content that we want to be building for the families of Winston-Salem while still being able to handle the development and the fundraising and the day-to-day operations. And the Children's Museum has helped provide some of that infrastructure for us.
And it's a nice venue.
Yeah, we've been working now for the past few months to upfit the Under the Stars Theater, which is the venue to the right as soon as you walk into the Children's Museum. And it's a great big black box space, and we have got some new riser units for the audience to sit during our shows. We'll be able to bring in our different sets and reconfigure the space every time you walk in. So you'll really be seeing a new world every time you enter our space. And we're just working to make it a really functional theater space for our shows.
Of course, every time I think of the Children's Museum, immediately the image comes to mind of the beanstalk as you walk in the door. And that would a perfect segue into our first play. So Maisie and Sprout coming up in June. Well, get us up to speed. The ground is so fertile, it seems like in Native American legend, and that's kind of the kickoff point for this one.
The roots of this story that we're telling come from us wanting to tell a story about storytelling, and absolutely, let's make it about local girls from Winston-Salem who are Native American and have Native American heritage. It's a story about those girls talking about the stories that their aunt told them, where they find the place in those stories, and how to develop their own as they grow up.
This state is not the first to embrace Native American culture to the extent of there's so many tribes that exist here and continue to exist here throughout the east and west and from the mountains to the coast. This is a step in that direction.
This is a step in that direction to begin a conversation, to open up our audiences and our artists who we work with to start to make our community, the Winston-Salem community, throughout and not limited to where we started.
It was very important to us to tell a story of two modern Native American sisters, because one fear that we have is young people in elementary schools are being taught about the history of Native Americans, and they were here hundreds of years ago, and there is sort of an image in their head of what Native American people looked like and what they did. And it's not a conversation about who they are, and they are here, and they are a very important part of our local culture and our history. So we were very inspired by a book by Charlene Hunt, who wrote a story when she was studying at Salem College about what it's like to be Native American today. And we actually circled back around and we found her, and she is going to be playing the aunt, the storyteller, in our play, and is going to be sharing her story as a local modern Native American woman. And her daughter is also going to be in the play as one of the sisters.
Peppercorn Theater director Harry Poster and producing directors John Bowers and Anna Rooney. Maisie and Sprout by Naomi Schaefer opens Friday, June 12th at the Children's Museum of Winston-Salem, where it'll run through the 21st. Beginning July 10th at the Arts Council's Hanesbrands Theater, it's Gerald Friedman and John Morris's Take One Step, now celebrating its 50th year. And in August, John Bauer's adaptation of The Servant of Two Masters opens at the Children's Museum, the home for Peppercorn Theater. You'll find links to the complete season and more at WFDD.org and click on Triad Arts Weekend.
You're listening to Triad To Do now. We are back, and we're going to be a regular feature of the show now. And so look forward to hearing about new events in the Triad area, events that David, Eddie, and I find particularly interesting, whether it's because of our personal interests or just because there are things that are happening that didn't make it on the show for one reason or another. But we still want you to know about them, and we still want to see you out in the community at these events.
That's right.
So summer is now in full swing, David, and what do you have for us? What do you recommend?
Well, I mean, I think of summer, I think of hot, steamy dance. Yeah.
Yes.
I got that on the ticket for this weekend, actually. The event is called A Bailar, and I'll tell you a little bit about it in just a second. But I moved here from Austin, Texas, where I just really enjoyed the benefits of an extremely diverse Latino community there in Austin. It's a great city, and you know, the great food, the Tex-Mex, wonderful music, and of course dance traditions. The population here in the Triad is really growing in the Latino realm. It's the fastest growing segment of the population for our state, and groups like Hispanic Arts Initiative in Winston, and I can think of Casa mm-hmm. Azul in Greensboro, they're doing a great job of helping to raise awareness about an appreciation for all things Hispanic.
Mm-hmm.
This weekend, it's A Bailar, as mentioned. Let's dance.
That's the exact translation.
That's it. Okay. Well, I don't know if it's exact or not. My Spanish is pretty poor, even though I lived in Mexico. But I think, A Bailar. Let's dance, they're calling it. It's coming up Saturday night, June 13th from 6:30 to 8:30.
Okay.
It's going to be over at the Milton Road Center for the Arts down there on Spruce Street in Winston-Salem. And the band performing all night long live, it's going to be really, really good. Ricardo Diquez and the Tropic Orchestra. And it's a huge salsa band. He's from Venezuela, and his dad was born in Trinidad. And I have some roots in Trinidad myself. So my grandfather was born there.
Neat.
And so, yeah, neat connection there.
I have a quick question about a salsa band. You say a big salsa band. What are some of the instruments included in a salsa band?
You're going to hear trombones. You're going to hear trumpets. You're going to hear a chorus of singers. You're going to hear timbales and drums and congas and all kinds of percussion. And they're up there playing, but they're also dancing. And it's just really neat to watch because they're so excited about the music. And Ricardo's an amazing singer and mm-hmm. great entertainer. And you can hear some fantastic music. And it's exciting. It's loud. And the audience is encouraged to dance. So
that's fun.
And I guess on this, Maria Sanchez Bodhi, who runs the Hispanic Arts Initiative, told me recently that actually on the show, and you can check out the interview on Triad Arts, that they're going to have four professional dance couples there mixing and mingling with the audience. So they'll be dancing and getting the floor warmed up for everybody who's there. So a really neat Caribbean cultural opportunity for everybody here in the Triad. And that's coming up this Saturday night. You'll find out more on our website. We'll post a link to HispanicArtsInitiative.org.
That sounds like a really fun event.
It's going to be great. Yeah, and check out the band, too. There's an amazing group. So what do you got? What do you got cooking?
So I have an event called the first Chamber Crawl that's happening in our area.
Chamber Crawl.
Chamber Crawl. So this is an event that's being done in collaboration between EMF, that's Eastern Music Festival's Fringe Series, and Classical Revolution Greensboro. And actually, you've spoken with Brian Carter about Classical Revolution.
That's right, cellist and the founder of the group here.
Exactly. Yeah. So the idea behind this event and what Brian is doing is to bring classical music into spaces where it hasn't otherwise been performed up until this point. So that means bars and other venues similar to bars where people can just enjoy this in a different context than they might have otherwise.
It's a great idea.
So this event is happening Saturday, June 20th, and it's going to run from 1 p.m. to 5 p.m. And what it's going to be is sort of a mini festival. You can just walk South Elm Street in Greensboro, and various locations will be hosting these chamber groups. And the chamber groups will be performing for about 30 to 40 minutes. So you can pick and choose who you want to see, when you want to see Museum. And then at the end at 5 p.m., everyone's going to be meeting up at Gibbs 100 and for a beer and also just a nice finale. And so you can mingle with musicians there. And it's a free event to top it all off.
Nice. And that's I like the length of that, too. 30 minutes, 45 minutes, the perfect little bite-sized recital. And then I guess Gibbs is sort of their sponsoring microbrew. They hang out there quite a bit during the year.
Yes.
Well, geez, lots of stuff going on and some of the things that might have slipped under your radar. So glad to have a chance to bring those out on Triad To Do. Well, that's all for today's show. Lots going on this weekend and beyond here in the Triad and High Country, so much so that it can be tough to keep up with it all. We try to make it a little easier with Triad To Do, and you can follow some of the other arts events that caught our eye this week on Twitter at Triad Arts Speak. Our technical producer is Eddie Garcia, and our associate producer is Bethany Chafin. If you'd like to be on Triad Arts, go to our website and click on Triad Arts to submit your event. It's WFDD.org. You'll find podcasts there, too. And as always, we'd love to hear from you. Send your questions, comments, and suggestions to triadarts@wfu.edu. I'm David Ford. Thanks for listening to Triad Arts Weekend.